Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you Me'eretz HaKedesh, is daf Lamed Dalet. So, just to remind you, we had a Mishnah yesterday, which was really a brilliant continuation of our discussion about what the din is legabe Isser Chal al Isser in all of these cases that we had in Yevamot, so the case where they switched their wives, which is the case of the mission we had yesterday, and we had three levels of Yisr Chal al Yisr possibility. The lowest level was, of course, where there's just Yisr Chal al Yisr, the same. That's, we're not even discussing. We're assuming that we're going with the assumption that Ein Yisr Chal al Yisr unless there's a reason why. So there's three possible reasons. One reason is called Isur Kolel. So an Isur Kolel is where we add additional Isurim, but not additional people. But there's additional either people, objects, Isurim, whatever the case may be, and it still only applies the Isur to the same number of people it did before. So that's Kolel, new things. It's inclusive. If it's an Isur Mosif, then it's more extensive on the people. So then more people become usher in that is. So we're going to just have an example of the moment in this Mishnah. And then we have the highest likelihood in which maybe even Rabbi Shimon would be murdered. That was part of the machlokas we had yesterday with Bar Kapora, with Rabbi Chia, and we showed that, in fact, Rabbi Shimon seems to be murdered. If it's Bevat Achat, the two Isurim are chal at the same moment. So then we say Isur Chal al Isur. Now, we had a case in the Mishnah, and the Mishnah was a strange case where basically two guys marrying two women, and at the chuppah they get confused, and each one takes the other one's wife. We had the wedding organizer, whatever it was called, planner. Yes, wedding planner. She was the one that was to blame for all of this. But anyway, in the event that these women were not only married, which would of course make them an Eishes Ish to the other guy, but they were also the wives of two brothers, then it would also be Eshet Achiv. And if the two of them were sisters, then it would be also Achot Isha. And if both of them were Nidais, then they would also be Nidais. And the Mishnah says you'd be chayav on every single one of those cases. So you'd be chayav, in other words, four chataot apiece for all of the people in this little game. So you can multiply four chataot times four people, you end up with 16 chataot. Somebody's getting rich on that. So the chataot sellers, you never can tell, the wedding planner might have had some kind of stock in there. Anyway, but what it does show is that the Tana of the Mishnah is clearly saying Isur Chal al Isur in any way possible, right? Because, I mean, let's analyze what the case over here it would be. Because this Tana, who is the Tana that clearly holds Isur, Isur Kolel, Isur Mosif, Isur Bat Achat, they're all going to be Isur Chal al Isur. So over here, the moment that the first guy is Mekadesh, the first woman, let's call her Rachel, we'll call him Reuven. So now Shimon is going, who's a brother, he's going to be Usur for two reasons that came simultaneously. Eshet Ish and Eshet Ach, right? And we're going to be Chayev on both of them. So there you go. We have two Isurim because of Bat Achat. Now, Shimon now goes ahead, the second brother, and he marries Rachel's sister Leah. So now, by doing that, he created an Isur of the same two Isurim here on all of his brothers, right? And how did he do that? He creates an Isur of Achot Isha. Isn't that true? So at the moment that he does this, then they're going to also be affected, certainly, because of all the other women are going to be Asura. They're Asura to him because of Achot Isha. So because of this, he becomes Asur because of Achot Isha. He'll also be Chayev on Achot Isha and his brother's wife, even though she was Asur to him before as an Eshet Ish and as an Eshet Achiv. So he'll say, where's there room for the Isur of Achot Isha to be chal, but he was assuring himself on all of the sisters. So now that would mean that he also becomes on this. that is not affecting more people, but it's affecting more issues to him. So Shimon was usher before, and now he's usher to more people. And who is the more people? Her sister. So because of that, he's also going to be usher to the single sister that was with the brother, which you'd think, well, she was already Asura. Doesn't matter, because there's 10 other sisters. So once it included them, it includes also her. Now, the moment that this woman goes ahead and becomes Anita, she is Asura even on her own husband. Before, she was Muteris to her husband. Now she's Asura on her husband. That means that the Isser of Nida includes more people, because now the husband is also Asura. So if the husband is Asura, so now if the husband is Asura, so is the brother, because it's an Isser Mosif. So you see an example in this Mishnah. It's a beautiful Mishnah, therefore, that brings you an example of every possible way in which this woman would be actually, would cause us the 16 chata'ot to the four people. Perfect. Omer of Yudasu, who is that? Because we were unable to definitively show until now the mukkar, because we were talking about yesterday, Rabbi Shimon, was a question whether even all the basachas. And we're talking about Rabatsi, we were also talking about a machlokas. Does he hold a Visser Kailal or not? Who's the man di Omer in a Beferish Mishnah that is telling us that all three modalities of Isser Chalal Isser are going to be Chal? Omar Rav, well, I know who that is. That's Rabbi Meir. Because we had this Braita, we've discussed this Braita before, and it goes like this. It's possible for a guy to eat one thing and to be Chayiv four separate Chata'ot and one Asham. How is that? Well, let's imagine a case where the guy was tummy, and he's eating chalev. So chalev is an iser kars. And this chalev happens to be notar as well. And it was hegdesh. So now he's also being moil behegdesh, and he's chayev on another iser karet, which is notar. And he's doing this lovely meal on Yom HaKippurim. So what do you have in this case? So you've got Tomei, who's Urcho Kachim, that, since he's Tomei himself, that's an Isser Kars. He's eating Chelev, which is an Isser Kars. He's eating Notar, which is an Isser Kars. And it's Yom HaKippurim, which is an Isser Kars. And he also was over on Me'ila. And Me'ila is a Chiev of an Asham. So there you go. The guy was Chayev, four separate Chata'ot, plus one Asham. Says Rabbi Meir, well, no, not really. Because if it were merely Yom Kippur, then I want to be able to add a case. And therefore I say, yeah, your case is good. But it could also be Shabbos. It could be Yom Kippur came out on Shabbos. Now, if it's Shabbos, even though I personally don't hold that there's an Isser of Haitzah on Yom Kippur, which would be Mechayev Karis, but since it's also Shabbos, if the guy was chewing his meal as he was walking home on Yom Kippur for his Kiddush on Yom Kippur, well, the guy's eating on Yom Kippur, so as he was walking home, he's chewing, and therefore he was also Chayev on Haitzah. Then why don't we add one? So he's going, what? I'm in a shame. Come on, we're talking about Isrei Bachila. What are we adding? Carrying? That's not the point. All right, now, so therefore, it's clear that what Rabbi Meir is saying is that, look, let's analyze the case. The animal is basically born. Okay, so then as it was born, it was chulin, and it had chelev, and its chelev was usher. So that was already chal. At that moment, however, everything was mutter b'hana'a. Now I go ahead and I'm magdish the behema. Oh, now there's an isra hana'a that wasn't there before on the chelev. It was only usher on achila. So now the kachim added additional issues that were usher. So because of that, there is now an isra chalal isra again on the achila because of the Isser of Zarut, even though before it was Asr Bachila, but now it's Asr more than that. Fine. And then we're going to say that because of the fact that it is now going to be noser and becomes usher to the Mizbeach, that's called an Isser Mosif, because until now it was only usher on the humans that are not allowed to eat it. The moment that it became noser, it became usher on the Mizbeach. So then it's usher on more, in which case now it's also a Misser of Mosif to the Kohanim. And therefore, they're going to be already usher again because of Noser, even though it was already usher from two Isurim before. This is Isur Mosif. And in this case, when the guy becomes Tomei, until this time, before he became Tomei, wasn't he allowed to eat Kachim, the kind of Kachim that was given over to him to eat? Absolutely. But now that he became Tomei, now he's not allowed to eat any type of Kachim. So therefore, since it's an Isur Kailel, because he's adding now all types of Kodesh, so it's also Kailal. Since it's Yom HaKippurim, we're going to say Yom HaKippurim, until now he was allowed to eat Chulin. Now for Yom HaKippurim, he becomes also usher to eat everything, even Chulin. So therefore, he now gets an Isser of Yom HaKippurim of eating Kachim, another example of an Isser Kailal. And then Rabbi Meir said it could also be Shabbos. Now Shabbos and Yom Kippur are chal at exactly the same moment. So then that means that he also holds bevat achat. There you go. So we've got Rabbi Meir saying all four types of additional chiyuvim of iser chal al iser. Perfect. But there's a little bit of a problem here, because we're going to explain that the Mishnah is talking about. Remember, we proved yesterday this was not an example of wife switching. It was a problem of a wedding planner. And if it was a problem of a wedding planner, then the poor victims of wedding planners actually go to the wedding expecting to have a good time. No, not only that. They actually go to the wedding expecting to be doing a mitzvah by marrying. So now this is called a to'eh bidvar mitzvah. So the person made an honest mistake and he wanted to do a mitzvah. Now, Rabbi Meir actually was a Talmud of the Tannaim that argue about what's the din if somebody makes a mistake thinking he's doing a mitzvah. Is he chayev or not? So therefore asks the Gemara, which one of Rabbi Meir's Rabbeim was he going according to at this time? Rabbi Meir Aliba Deman. Was it Rabbi Yoshua? But Rabbi Yoshua is the one who says Torah Bedvar Mitzvah is Potter. So he must have been going Aliba de Rebbe Eliezer, because otherwise, why would we say we're chayiv? Or, you know what? Maybe, actually, even Rabbi Yeshua would be moda in this case. Remember the great case that we had when we were learning Shabbos about a guy who's got two children to be mal, and one of them was born on Shabbos, and one of them was born right after Mitzray Shabbos. So this guy's got twins. So one of the children is supposed to have his bris on Sunday, and one is supposed to have his bris on Shabbos. Now, what happens over here is they got a bris planner. Oh my gosh. So they mixed up the babies. So now they do the mila of the baby that was supposed to be nimal tomorrow. They do him today. And if in that case, when Rabbi Yoshua says that your Torah bedvar mitzvah, what we could say is that maybe in this case, Rabbi Yoshua would also be moda, you're not potter. Because kikom Rabbi Yoshua Torah bedvar mitzvah potter hanimi legabi tinokot. Where did Rabbi Yoshua say that you're potter? That's only in the case where, I mean, like, there's really pressure over you. Oh, my God, the moil is coming up. What's going on? Bring in the kid already. No, says the moil. Kvater. Everybody's going nuts. Obviously, they're going to get confused under those circumstances. So that's Zmano Bohu. We have to get the mila done now, right? But, I mean, this guy who ended up, he's trying to get married. I mean, he could wait a week, a year, a century. I mean, he could wait. So what's the big rush to get married? So therefore, Rabbi Yoshua wouldn't say your Torah bedvar mitzvah, but take your time and don't get a wedding planner. Do everything right. And that way you don't end up taking the wrong girl to bed. There you go. So maybe Rabbi Yoshua would be made that in such a case, we don't call it a Torah bedvar mitzvah. So that's possible, because over here it's not Zmano Bohu. Wait a minute. What about the Mishnah in Trumas? which was the other famous case about Torah bar mitzvah, huh? We had the case in the Mishnah over there where Rabbi Yeshua says that it's nonetheless potter. Even though it wasn't bol, it says a kohen is sitting there and he's eating truma, right? And he thinks that he's doing a mitzvah. And then suddenly finds out in the middle of eating truma that he's a ben grusha or ben chalutza and he had no right to be eating truma. So now the question is, okay, he's a halal. So Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, pay up, man. You owe, you're basically a zar shachal truma. Zar shachal truma pays barnea. The also an additional fifth. You don't only get a karen, you pay a chomish. So Rabbi Yeshua, however, says in that case, you're potter. Why? Because he was trying to do a mitzvah. And there's a mitzvah of achilas kachim, there's a mitzvah of achilas truma. And you see over there that Rabbi Yeshua holds that even though you're certain, I mean, what a bohu, you can't wait a little bit to eat. What do you have to eat right now? So why is there anything that should make you forget or, you know, forget to look into your genealogical records to see if you're ben grusha, ben chalutz? I mean, take your time, do a search, find out if you're a ben grusha, ben chalutz, and don't eat the truma, no? So why is that called bohul? It shouldn't be called a Torah bidvar mitzvah. Says the Gemara, did you forget? When we were learning trumas, remember that Rabbi Barabaya explained it, that it is talking about zman or bohul, because he was eating truma this week, and it was Erev Pesach. And therefore, if he didn't get this truma, which was chometz eaten now, he was going to have to burn the truma. We don't want to burn the truma. So he is actively pursuing the mitzvah of Tashbisu, and he's only got a few minutes left before 10:03, and he's got to finish up this truma. Of course he got confused. Okay, so that doesn't disprove us. It's possible that indeed Rabbi Yeshua is meida if zmano bahul. So alcha b'truma b'erev Pesach haskinan, the zmana bahul. Or, you know what? We could say that our Mishnah maybe it's not necessarily going Alibet Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah, you know what? We could make our Mishnah work out according to the most difficult of all of these shitas, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says Einis Chalal is the only place where we found out Rabbi Shimon was willing to go the extra mile and get the extra Isser was Bevat Achat, right? Okay, so let's have the Mishnah talking about a case of Bevat Achat, and then it could work out even only by Rabbi Shimon. We don't have to say it's going like Rabbi Meir. How do we have Bevat Achat? I could figure most of these cases, Bevat Achat, but the thing about Anita, how is that Bevat Achat? I don't understand. So the first three cases, yes, we could have a case where two brothers appoint a shliach to go ahead and they both appoint the same shliach to be Makadesh, a sister in the family that they're both marrying the sisters of, and they both give money to the shliach to hand over to the sister, the respective sister. Little did they know that the respective sisters are actually appointing their own shliach to be Makabel, the Kedushin, from the brothers. Well, both shlichim meet up at the gas station, and it turns out, oh gosh, I was just on my way to give Kiddushin to these two girls. Well, how do you like that? And I was just on the way to accept the Kiddushin for those, on behalf of those two girls, from the two brothers. That's exactly where I'm bringing the Kiddushin from. Amazing. Give me the cash. He hands him over the cash. They're both simultaneously married, which allows us to see all of this happening instantaneously. Eshet ish, achot isha, and eshet achiv. Fantastic. But where did the nidah happen at exactly the same instant? That doesn't make sense. El nidah, hechim ashkachas lo. I mean, either they were nidahs before, in which case, then none of these other Isurim would be chal according to Rabbi Shimon, or they become nidahs afterwards, in which case, the nidahs wouldn't have been chal. But how could it happen that it all occurs at the same instant? I mean, there's no way to define the instant lagabe, the nida itself. Omrav, Amram, Omarav, well, we have that same case, you know, the birthday girl and the birthday boy that were just becoming bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah. Why couldn't we have that? So what happens is that these girls are basically have been bleeding before the 13th birthday of these boys, twin brothers, and marrying twin sisters, and therefore born on the same day, and of course one year apart, and therefore the girls become bat mitzvah at the same moment that the boys become bar mitzvah, and therefore we got the 16 chataot, and they only become chayev at the same moment. There you go. So, b'shofot, b'toch shloshah, sar li'achash shloshah, so before the 13th year, into the 13th year, for the birthdays of the men, that's li'chayuvi inu, that's the males, and it was mitoch shneima, so it was the 12th birthday of the two sisters, from before the 12th birthday till after the 12th birthday, that was vis-a-vis the chiyav for, because we said there's 16, it's for the chiyav of all of them. There we go. So now, it ends up, we don't have to say that it's going, Aliba the Rabbi Shimon, Aliba the Rabbi Meir, could go off, Aliba the Rabbi Shimon. But there's a problem, because it says over here that these nice, sweet Jewish girls, who we assume, therefore, have not been having any relations before their marriage, as it says over here, they took up to the chuppah, was huchlefu. I mean, only nice, sweet Jewish girls would actually take a wedding planner who would destroy the wedding for them, right? I don't, do goyim actually destroy their weddings too? Well, maybe. Zelu umazeh. So, if that's the case, then how did she get pregnant? The Mishnah says, we separate the women from their husbands for these shlosha chadashim to make sure that we know if they got pregnant. But I thought, now this, as the Achronim point out, this is certainly not true today, and it's one of those kind of things that changes with the norms of the time, and that at the time of the Gemara, normally a woman would not get pregnant if she is a virgin. So what would happen is that in the context of breaking her betulim, there's too much bleeding and messiness and so on, and therefore you don't end up with a pregnancy. So if she wouldn't get pregnant from the first time that she had intercourse, so then why are we worried that she's pregnant? Well, what kind of crazy question is that? And who's to say they only slept together once? I mean, for heaven's sakes, you know, it's their wedding night. I mean, they might have gone at it all night. So why not? So she got pregnant from the second bia. What's the issue? I don't understand. It's talking about Shebalu Vishanu. But wait, Rabbi Chiya said that there was a total of 16 different chataot. We've got four players, and we've got four Isurim of Kares, right? So we had the Eshes Ish, and we had the Eshet Ach, and we had the Achot Isha, and we had the Nida. So now, if you're telling me that actually they slept together twice, we would have, and that's the only case where the Mishnah makes sense, then Rabbi Chiya should have said, there are 32 chataot. Now, that really doesn't make too much sense. Why? Because normally, the Isser that we're talking about, of an Isser karet, if it's performed multiple times, b'shogeg, that is called he'alem echad. And he'alem echad, the idea over there would be that you're only chayev once on any type of iser, because you need yediot mechalkot. So why is the Gemara saying, aliba de Rabbi Chiya, that we would need 32? We would still only need 16. So where did we get this idea from? Now, obviously, what we're talking about over here is, first of all, we're assuming that Rabbi Chiya is trying to tell us what is absolutely the given over here, right? Okay, so the given would be 32. So then the question over here is, why are we saying that you would be chayev separately? So what happened over here is that we are assuming that the Mishnah is going Aliba de Rebbe Eliezer. So Rebbe Eliezer's shita is that the halacha is that biot are mechalkot, not only yediot are mechalkot. So in other words, the fact that each act of intercourse requires a period in between in order to get an erection, so this gives us completely separate acts, and therefore they are consider to be each one of them a separate yediyah. Now, you'll say, okay, fine. So it's going Aliba the Rebbe Eliezer. So then it should be 32. Ask the Gemara, but if it's going Aliba the Rebbe Eliezer, who holds biot or mechalkot, then why are we only counting the number of acts of intercourse? Because according to Rebbe Eliezer, you're chayev on every thrust separately. And this is based on the idea of a, remember, we've had several times, the issue of if someone is told in the middle of intercourse by his wife, I just felt myself become anida, he is not allowed to withdraw, because withdrawing with an erection is an act of bia. Bia doesn't necessarily have to mean coming in. It could mean going out. Well, we saw that in this week's parsha. And Zohi bia, Zohi shiva. No, but seriously. So the idea over here is that, I think there really is a remez, but so we see over here that the important question is pleasure. So we're defining the isser that's involved as the pleasure of intercourse. The pleasure of intercourse is just as much going in as is going out. And therefore, he's not allowed to withdraw. So he has to wait until he loses his erection, and then he's allowed to withdraw. So what does that mean? That Rebbe Eliezer says over there, Beferish, that he would be chayav echatas for withdrawal. But, I mean, that's not a whole act of bia, is it? Just one withdrawal? So what do you see from there? That according to Rebbe Eliezer, any part of a bia is considered to be enough to be mechayav you. So therefore, when Rebbe Chiya is saying that there's 16, that's completely wrong. There may be hundreds of chataot, according to Rebbe Eliezer. We should have a thrust meter over here before we're able to tell you how many chataot you're going to be chayev, right? So anyway, the Mishnah, the Brisa doesn't really make any sense, because l'taymech, would you not have to say, according to Rebbe Eliezer, you're mechayev al kol koach v'koach? So then tuvav, and you know how many chataot they're supposed to be brought over here? Ela, then obviously you're going to take the simple explanation of the Mishnah. The simple explanation of the Mishnah is, we're talking about the ideas. We're talking about how many separate Isurim we could be talking about, not how many times you're over the Isur. So we talked about the first Koach, according to Rebbe Eliezer. So we talked about the first Bia, that's all. So Rebbe Chiya was saying, look, these are the problems. That could be, you're right, that he obviously would be Chayev, practically speaking, far more. Now we get to the other deep secret as to why this Mishnah and discussion appears here in Yevamos. For the world's most important act of Yibum, Tamar. Ha-ha. Tamar is a curious case, because Tamar should have been in a position where she couldn't have gotten pregnant from Yehuda. You're saying over here that the case on the Mishnah would have to be Kigon Shebaalu Vishanu, but that is not what happened with Yehuda. What happens with Yehuda is he packs up, she packs out, and they never find each other again, right? Until that desperate stand at the end. So now, how in the world did Tamar get pregnant? Now, the Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean, how did Tamar get pregnant? I mean, she's been married before. So just because the two husbands that she had were obviously practicing withdrawal and were trying to avoid getting her pregnant, that doesn't mean that they didn't break her psulim, does it? So that is going to be the question the Gemara is going to pursue. But we're going to take it for granted right now that Tamar was a betula. So Amalei Rav L'Reb Nachman, you claim that a woman doesn't get pregnant mi bia rishona, but Tamar got pregnant mi bia rishona. Omar Le, Tamar, before seducing Yehuda and pretending to be the zona, she actually removed her own betulim with her finger. So she just crushed her betulim, and that way she was able to become pregnant. And Rabbi Yitzchak says, you know, they do this in Rebbe's family. The Rishonim explained, why would they do such things in Rebbe's family? Because they all sent their husbands away to learn right after the marriage. So they weren't going to see their husband for a half year until the next Yontav. They wanted to get pregnant. So in order to ensure that they would get pregnant right away, so they were Mo'achot, and they were all called Tamar. They would change the name to Tamar as a sign of the great Madrega that they were at, of wanting to have children from these Talmidei Chachomim. Listen, social values change. Let me tell you. It's not funny. It's really and truly a different world from the world of Goyim. I keep pointing out to you that the entire Gemara's relationship to all of these issues, and that is Merumas in this week's Parsha. That's the Shechorot Ke'orev that we spoke about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you guys have all your crazy hang-ups about sex, and there's nothing I love to hear about more. And therefore, these are the sugyas that are most, and this is Merumas in the Haftarah. Shechorot Ke'orev Ve'orva LaHashem. That's what the Medrash darshans. So Arev means sweet. Okay? So again, it's very hard for Westerners to take all of these sugyas because of the tremendous shock of the complete social difference, cultural difference in attitudes. Over here, these are simple questions that children know about. And if you're pretending that you don't, so then you're crazy and you're some kind of Christian nut. Okay, so now what happens over here is that in order to be zochot, to be able to get pregnant more quickly, so she was metzba macha, like all of the women that were very special in Rebbe's family, alamadik rashman tamar, al shem tamar shemacha be'etzba'a. But I don't understand. She was married to two men before, Er ve'onan. Ah, says the Gemara. Er ve'onan never penetrated her vaginally. They always were meshamesh shelo kedarka. Now, this is a bit of a problem. Now, here's the problem. It says in the Braita that while a woman is nursing, and it's not healthy for her to get pregnant while nursing, because then the milk goes bad, baby doesn't like milk, and remember, in those days, we consider that to be sakanat nefashot. We don't have a way to replace a mother's milk for 24 months. Therefore, for those 24 months, her husband should basically ejaculate outside, withdraw, dash mi bifnim, vizore mi bachutz. So this is a nice way of saying he's threshing inside the vagina, he's winnowing, so to speak, by ejaculating outside. So says Rebbe Eliezer. And the Chachomim said to him, how can you do such a thing? That's like Maaseh Erva Onan. And now, if that's like the Maaseh of Erva Onan, so then that means that Erva Onan had slept with Tamar vaginally. So why didn't they break her betulim? Now, the obvious question over here is, of course, the issue of why is this not Hotzaat Zera Levatala? What's he saying? Go and ejaculate on the ground? Like, what is that supposed to mean? So Rav Moshe has a long discussion about this, right? And what he says, Rav Moshe, is obviously you see from the sugya that the idea of Hotzaat Zera Levatala means only completely without any purpose. Because otherwise, why would we say, don't ruin the milk? Don't sleep with her for 24 months. What's the big deal? You got to go around to do an Isser of Hotzaat Zera Levatala. There is no Isser called Hotzaat Zera Levatala when there is purpose in it, of course. And therefore, the only reason, this is like a brilliant idea, the only reason that the Chachomim say, what? This is like Maaseh Erva Onan, is because Erva Onan, the only reason they were doing this was because they bedafka didn't want her to get pregnant. That is worse than Levatala. That's like going out of your way specifically that it should not serve any purpose, right? And therefore, the Taina to Rebbe Eliezer is, look, if the purpose over here is making your wife happy, you don't have to ejaculate, do you? So therefore, the ejaculation, I mean, you could learn tantric sex and go at it for a half an hour and don't ejaculate. So LMI, that would mean, so then the fact that you ejaculate at the end serves no purpose. And therefore, they asked it. Masha ain't this how Rebbe Moshe understands it. Therefore, Rebbe Eliezer must hold That's ridiculous. There's one act, basically, as we saw before. It's a normal act of intercourse, and therefore it would include even the ejaculation at the end. And because of that, fine, so then you have to avoid getting the woman pregnant. So then ejaculate on the ground. What's the big deal? This is Rebbe Eliezer Shita. We're paskin like the Chachamim, and therefore we should use other methods, not withdrawal. Fine. But in any event, this would be, by the way, as I mentioned to you earlier, even though we would say, as we did with the Mishamshayis B'Moich, which we had the sugya earlier, all of these sugyas are Yevamah's sugyas, and it all comes with the Tamar connection. So that contraception and the idea of lo yazara, which was the whole mucker of Malchus Beis David and the story of Yibum, obviously is going to be nogea bedavka yevamis. Don't you see how beautiful it is that everything fits, mamish, so fantastically? Anyway, so the question is, if you're telling me that is the same as Erva Onan, so aren't you saying that Erva Onan actually would have broken her psulim? Because what they did was they were Zerim, they were Chayresh Bibifnim. And if that's the case, so then why are they considered to be Dash Bibifnim? I mean, why were they considered not to have broken her psulim? Well, it doesn't mean literally. It means it's Kabase Erva Onan. In one way, not to mean it's totally like Maaser Vonan, it's Maaser Er Vonan in the sense that it was without any purpose for the Zera. So therefore, it says, Vayayim Baal Eshet Achiv V'Shichet Arza. So that part, it's the same, what you're doing to prevent your wife from getting pregnant while she's nursing. But it's Lo Maaser Er Vonan, the Iluhatam Shelo Kedarka V'Acha Kedarka. So now the obvious question is the Marsha's question, which is, so what in the world makes you say all of this complicated stuff when all you had to say was that Tamar was not a Betula and that Erva Onan actually had slept with her, except that they withdrew, in which case they had broken her Besulim? And why do you have to come up with this crazy business of she used her finger to take out her psulim because they, Dafka, would not have been Mishamish Kedarka? What makes you think they were not Mishamish Kedarka? Where does it say in the Pasuk they're not Mishamish Kedarka? It doesn't make any sense. You could have had a very simple explanation. Says the Marsha, I don't know. I mean, there must be some kind of rebbez in the Pasuk that indicates that they were Mishamish Shelo Kedarka. But Lamaisa, some of the Mefarshim say it's very simple. I mean, you really think Erva Onan are stupid? If they don't want their wives to get pregnant, withdrawal is not a good way to ensure that they don't get pregnant. So that what you do want to make sure is that you're nowhere near being able to give them any kind of zera. That's the point. So therefore, they ensured that by keeping their wives away from any chance of accepting zera. Fine. Okay, so that makes sense. Okay, so now the question is, how do we know that Er, we say Kamasa Er Vonan, the Torah never talks about Er doing anything like that. It just said Er died. We know it says Beferish that Onan did that, and that's why we call masturbation Onan. Onanut is based on the story in the Torah about Onan, even though that's a sort of Christian kind of idea, because this has nothing to do with masturbation. But the idea of Hotza'at Zera Levatala, which the Chachomim are calling the Maisa Erva Onan, fine, so it's a loose attribution of poor Onan who got his name associated with ugly things. So now, I understand that Onan, it says, Beferis V'Shichet Arza. But where does it say Er ever did such a thing that you're taking it for granted? Omrim Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Dichtiv Vayamet Gam Oto. Gam Oto is Mashma. The same issue was going on. Afu Boto Mita Met. Well, I don't get it. I mean, Onan, it says that he had a reason for doing this. And what was the reason for doing this? The reason was that Kilo Lo Yehazara. He did not want to give his sperm for his child. It wouldn't be his child, and that would be taking from him something that was very intimate and using it. And he didn't like that idea. But Er was married. normally, a regular marriage. He was married Tamar. So Tamar, so why in the world would he do that? Well, Tamar is very beautiful. He wanted to get her to get pregnant and then start getting stretch lines all over her pretty tummy. So because of that, he wasn't going to allow her to get pregnant. Okay. So now, of course, being as we are in this parsha, we would only expect that the Gemara of the Daf Yomi would address the psukim that we were talking about yesterday. We need to understand them. So there it says, "V'ish asher yishkav ish ota, isha rather asher yishkav ish ota shichvat zara, v'rachatzu b'mayim v'tamu ad ha'arev." Okay, so remember, as Rashi explains, I'm sure you all did Shnai Mikra, Echad Targum, Echad Rashi. So as Rashi explains, we're talking over there about a gzerata katuv. Intercourse requires tefillah, not because of touching semen, because it's based on astarim, and therefore it does not have to be any kind of contact, but it's a halacha. Now, but it says beferish in the pasuk, asher yishkav ish ota shechvat zara. Now, ota is always a miut. Dafka her. So who is her? I mean, we're talking about a woman. Well, it means not a kala. Oh, that's weird. Not a kala. Okay. So says Rabbi Yehuda. V'chachamim say, no, it means ota, normal intercourse, not shalo kedarka. Now, so Hon was Reb Nachman's son. So Hon says to Reb Nachman, I've never heard something so crazy in my life. What is Reb Yehuda saying? That the Torah says, if this woman was a kala, she doesn't have to go to the mikvah. Like, what? The only explanation I can have for that is that the Torah feels terrible. Because besides the fact of the wedding planner that cost so much money, there was that crazy woman that came and spent 3 hours putting on all of this ridiculous blush, eyeshadow, and God only knows what else, haircuts and permanents and dyes. And oh my God, this cost them $1,000 before the wedding. And if you're going to say she has to go to the mikveh the next morning, the whole thing was for nothing. So it must be that the Tera is chasa on all of that work of prettying up the kala. I mean, come on, man. What in the world would that mean, that a kala doesn't go to the mikvah? I think that doesn't make any sense. Lema kasavar Rabbi Yehuda, HaTorah chasa al takshitei kala? Oh, my lady, said Reb Nachman, my dear son, the issue over here is a serious issue. You can't call shechvas zera. Why does it say shechvas zera? Why is that the point of shechvat zera? Strange way to refer to intercourse, shechvat zera. But the point over here is that we need to have the idea of zera. Zera means specifically seeds. Seeds that work. Seeds that bring reproduction. Seeds that land up with an organism that grows from the seed. But since this kala is having her first bia, so then she's not going to be shechvas zera, because that seed is just wasted, since it cannot actually, if you hold any shemitaberet mi bi arishona, so since that seed is not going to be effective, it's not called shechvas zera. That's the svar of Rabbi Yehuda, and it's not right to make fun of it. This is a serious point. So then, okay, so what's the machlokas? So the Rabbanan hold shechvat zera is not, shechvat zera means that if you only did harah, so normally harah, that means just penetration, just a little bit of penetration, achnasat ha-torah, that is considered already to be an act of bia. But that is not the normal way to ejaculate, and therefore, unless this guy's a really hypersensitive yeshiva bacher, then the normal way to ejaculate is to have normal bia, right? So if that's the case, then the way that I understand shechvat zera is not the way that Rabbi Yehuda understands. It doesn't mean prat lakala. It means prat lahara, where we don't call that a full act of bia. We need gemar bia to be metame. And then when it says ota, it means her, normally, like a woman. And that would be prat l'shelo kedarka. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds, no, the whole idea of shelo kedarka and hara are both issues of Shechva Zera. Because the important element, according to Rebbe Yehuda, of Shechva Zera is seeds that are put in a place where they will germinate. If you just throw wheat on the top of the ground, that's not called planting. The same thing is true of Ahara. If you throw seeds on top of the ground, they're not going to germinate. And therefore, when it says Shechvat Zera, it means putting those seeds where they will germinate, which includes both the Kala idea and the Ahara. Ahara is not the right way to plant. Exactly. And then when it says Ota, so then Ota would be, we're going to take it a step further, even that it would mean Prat Lekala. So Shalokadarika obviously is in the wrong place. It's not going to germinate. And so is Ahara. Ota is Prat Lekala, which is the opposite of the way the Chachomim are learning. Anyway, Ravin says that Rabbi Yochanan said in Eretz Yisrael that if a woman was Shata Achar Bala, Eser Shanim, and he said, a woman was married, her husband died. For 10 years, she has not had relations with a man. At that point, her reproductive system is no longer hormonally active enough to be able to conceive. She's basically out of the parsha. Shuv ene yoleda, so she's not going to have a baby. So Reb Nachman says, well, her reproductive system is only out of it if she wasn't fantasizing about marrying. I mean, if she's been dreaming about being with a man this whole time, that keeps the juices flowing. And therefore, there would be no reason for her to have affected her hormones. So if she was planning on marrying, so then she for sure can get married. Now, Rava, remember, married Rav Chisda's daughter more than 10 years after her first husband. Her first husband, if you remember the beautiful story in the yeshiva that we learned, was that when she was a little girl, we had this in Bava Basra, when she was a little girl, she was sitting on Rav Chisda's lap, right? And he was learning with Rava and with Rami Bar Choma. So Rav Chisda says, so tell me, sweetie pie, which one of these boys do you want to marry? And she says, I'll take both. So Rava says, I want to be the last one. Okay, because obviously the first one was going to die. So that's exactly what happened. She marries Rami Bar Choma. Rami Bar Choma ends up dying. Meanwhile, Rava's married somebody else. When his first wife dies, this was more than 10 years later, then he marries the girl who said, I'm going to be married to both of you. So it's a good thing I said, me last. Okay, but so this was the story, right? Okay, so now Rava says to Rav Chisda's daughter, and they had kids. So he says to her, you know, the Talmidei Chachomim and the yeshiva are saying all kinds of Lashon Hara about you because they're saying, how come you still have children 10 years after you were married if you haven't been fooling around all those years? And they're saying, well, look at this. This was a woman who's rejected every shidduch that they brought her for 10 years, right? And she obviously was not interested in getting married. And now she's having children. So how do you explain that? Maybe she had some lovers, huh? So she says, who do you think I was fantasizing about the past 10 years? I always knew I was going to marry you, remember? So Ana Datoy Alochavoy, what a beautiful story. I always knew we were going to be lovers. And therefore, we were just waiting for your wife to kick the bucket. Well, I shouldn't say that part. But anyway, so since this was destined from the beginning of time, of course I can still have children with you. Anyways, this woman comes to Rav Yosef and she says, Rebbe, you know, I had a child and it was after 10 years after the death of my husband. So I don't know, like, what you guys are saying. Amarla, so he says to her, Biti, why don't we tell the truth? Al totzi laz al divrei chachamim. If the chachamim said that you can't have children, there's only one way that you have children, okay? So how about fessing up? She says, well, the truth is, yeah, I did have this goy as a lover. I didn't think he counted. So it's true. L'nochri nivalti. I definitely did have these relationships. Okay, I think we we might want to keep it. All right, we can still go. We have a couple of minutes. Omar Shmuel, all of these women that are going to be possibly in a position of needing to know who the real father was, and this could be because of Mamzerus, or it could be because of knowing whose child it is in terms of Yerusha, and it's the question of whether the child was conceived while she was still a Goya, or was it after she became a Jewess, and so on. All of these, you would think, are still the three-month people, but there are exceptions. So a Gioret, who normally would have to wait to make sure she's not pregnant, a Mishuchreret, in these cases, if they were Ketana, so then we're not concerned, because even though we're assuming that a Gioret as a Goya and a Shivcha had constant sex, but they don't have to wait 3 months, like we said before, because we don't assume that there was any kind of conception at that early age. Wait a minute. But Shmuel, then you're saying that the other cases, like the Bas Yisrael in our case, where they got confused or whatever these cases were, then if she wants to get married now or go back to her husband, needs to wait 3 months even though she's a Ketana? What happened? I mean, what's the case? Is it talking about that she was Mima Enet and that was the case? So that now she's walking away from her husband and she wants to get married to somebody else. But Shmuel was the one who said that she does not have to wait if she's Mima Enes, as we're going to see in a moment. And if you're talking about a girl who was a Ketana, was given a get, Shmuel already said that. The Omar Shmuel, Mianabo, Ina Tzricha Lamtin Shlosha Chodashim. Natan La Get, Tzricha Lamtin Shlosha Chodashim. So, apparently, why this is true, we're going to see tomorrow. But in any event, Shmuel already made that distinction. No, says the Gemara. Shmuel was talking about over here a child who was engaged in being a zonah. So it was biznut. So she was actually making a lot of money on the side over here, but she was a ketana. And therefore, in that case, you still have to wait. Why, we don't know, but you still have to wait for 3 months to know if you're pregnant. And what's the reason? The reason is that gazru ketana mishum gedola. If a woman that's been engaged in harlotry doesn't have to wait, so people might think that a gedola does not have to wait. So when it came to the idea of the ketana in these circumstances, we were gozer. Mashen kein, in the other cases of the gioret and the shivcha, that's not something that happens all the time, but sex happens all the time. So because of that, we're going to be gozer as usual, only in what is a common thing. And we never make a gezera, as we've seen so many times, never make a gezera when it's a rare occurrence. But wait a minute. We had a Mishnah just a moment ago, a couple of days ago, that we do not make a gezera of ketana mishum gedola. It says, beferish in the Mishnah, where you had the women that were switched, that if they're ketanot, then we don't wait to see if they're pregnant. Machzirin oto miyad. We do actually give them back to their husbands on the spot. Well, Omar Rav Gidol, Omar Rav, that was only because of a hora'at sha'ah. There was a very important reason for us to be matir this, but it is certainly not hora'at sha'ah, not in this case. What? You're not really saying that this happened, are you? I mean, come on, I thought this Mishnah was a crazy case, wedding planners switching the girls. I mean, that's crazy. You're telling me this actually happened? And they gave a hora'at sha'ah? And it wasn't a din in the Mishnah about the theory of the thing? Michlal de Havoy? This actually happened. Shnaim shekitshu. I mean, if it would be an actual event, you don't think it would have said, Maise b'shnei achim shekit. I mean, it would have said shnaim. It presents the whole thing as a case. And then it says, and if they were brothers, and if the wives were sisters. I mean, where does the Mishnah imply that such a thing happened, that you could say something so crazy that it was hora'at sha'ah? No, I mean... It was the equivalent of orasha. Orasha means something that is drawn out by the situation. So I'm trying to tell you, look, if you think that we didn't make a gezerah because something is not common. So let me tell you something. The most uncommon, crazy situation I ever heard of was this wedding planner who switched the wives, okay? The Rabbanan did not make gezerahs because of wedding planners. That's what I meant to say. Chilaf lo shchiach. This is weird. All right, we'll see another approach to Shmuel tomorrow. But meanwhile, we learned some very important halachas that are very, very contemporary. Obviously, this whole issue of contraception during nursing, lactation contraception is a very important issue and is nogea bizman hazeh. What's interesting is though, even though the original piskei halachas were going according to the Rabbanan, which said, shomer psoyim Hashem, and that you don't have to worry about that. Remember, we had this sugya before about mishamshim b'moch, where we were talking about the possibility of ruining milk, and the chachomim say, don't worry about it, Hashem erachem, and everything is going to be good, that we wouldn't do that. However, as I pointed out to you, Rav Henkin's famous teshuva, which is a brilliant teshuva, that the din of shomer psoyim Hashem is only where dosh be rabim, where it's the norm of behavior. And as Rav Henkin points out, the changes in hormones that have taken place because of modern nutrition, apparently, or pollution, whatever it is, happened so quickly that there never was a period where people would risk additional pregnancies based on the fact that women don't get pregnant for 24 months, or would risk losing a milk supply based on the fact that women don't get pregnant for 24 months. That changed very suddenly in the 1950s. And because of that, there is no dosh be'rabim, because the world was always careful to use contraception. And therefore, contraception would be either a chiev, depending on how you learn the sugya, or certainly a heter, even aliba de chachamim. So this becomes a very nogea sugya bizman hazeh as well. And we also found many times that even though it's possible to theoretically supplant milk, mother's milk, with other things, the Gemara does not view that as being a solution. So even if the mother is nursing, we don't say, well, you can always buy Similac, or you could hire a nursemaid. A little difficult today nowadays, but you never know. And we don't view that as being an option. Okay, it's been wonderful, wonderful learning with you, and especially planning Malchus Beis David with Tamar and with understanding the whole series of events and getting ready to drop our crazinesses and start taking on a real world's values. And that way, we'll be Zoche Bezrat Hashem to Mashiach Tzidkenu. Kol Tuv, everybody. Have a wonderful day.